great if they showed things in TV commercials the way they really are. For example, wouldn't it be great if they showed gas station men the way they really are, instead of those square-jawed guys who are always ready to leap out there and clean everything, polish off your glasses, they stand there and hold your hand, and if your motor drops out, they're ready there to put it back in with scotch tape. And then when the car drives away, you know, the music comes up, and a guy looks off into the distance, you know. He's the same guy, you know, it's this beautiful, handsome man with clear blue eyes. You know, the kind of guy that you see wearing those big sweaters in the men's clothing supplement in the New York Times. And there he is all of a sudden running a gas station. They say, yes, you can be sure when you see the man behind the pump. Oh, slumber on, my little gypsy sweetheart. There, gang. You just keep that there in abeyance there, because we're going to have to use that in case of emergency. Because, you see, I had a little experience, Walt. Saturday night, I go into one of these famous stations, you know, that always advertises its magnificent, ever-ready service, 24 hours, night and day. You come into that man there, you know, when you see the right emblem. So I say, well, there's the right emblem. I got a flat, see? So I go in there, and this little character wearing a hood, and with his nose running, you know, he comes out, and I say, I'd like to have a flat tire fixed. Yeah, there's a brief pause, and he says, hey, you putting me on, Mac? I said, no, I want a flat tire fixed. And there's a long pause, and he says, go fix your own tire. What do you think I am, Dad? For crying out loud. Oh, yeah, serviced with a smile, right, George? Well, then I could see the rest of the crew standing around all stubble bedecked, spitting and hawking away there, chewing tobacco and drinking Cokes. So I go into the station itself, you know, and it has the outside looks very jazzy and just like the TV commercials. I get inside there and they're playing craps. So as I get inside, I say, fellas, I've got a flat tire. That's right. A large, heavy-set man, wearing a hat sideways on his head, he'd been drinking heavily, looks up to me and says, what do you want us to do, cry? So I turned on my heel and headed for the next one. Oh, slumber on, my little gypsy sweetheart. La da 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 da. All together now, gang. La da da. I wish I knew the words to that atrocity. I'd sing that. Boy, would that bug Mr. Leader. Man, you think he got mad when I sang the Buick song? Oh, boy. Yeah, as a matter of fact, that was a nice time there. But, you know, speaking of this, wouldn't it be great if they really showed beer parties the way they really are? Instead of all these clean-looking limb youth types running around saying, all right, here we go. It's Valentine, Valentine, rick-a-ta-ting, ting-a-tang-tang-tang, ta-ta-ta-ta-ta, lumber-on, oh, little gypsy sweetheart. Why, can't you just see this commercial opening up, and it's dark and stygy, and, you know, it's real, sort of, you know, you can just feel that rotten feeling of a lot of headaches all going on at once. And then as in the darkness, you see, the guy, there's no voices. You know, I've got an idea for a real great beer commercial. In the darkness, the camera slowly opens up. It's a 58-second commercial, you know, in between extra points in the football game or something. And the announcer says, now the score stands at 17-5 in favor of the New York Giants. And now we'll be back in just a moment. And then out it comes, it's dark, you see. And the announcer says, we are now looking in on a factual beer party that was celebrated last night with Whoopi Beer. It's a long, dark shot. And all of a sudden you hear a guy in the background. And somebody says, well, will you help him to the door for crying out all over the street? Hey! Real commercials, you know, the stuff really moves. And, yeah, and then can you imagine Have you noticed how these people, well, here's another typical commercial, the automobile commercial. You've noticed that almost in every instance, there is a clean-limbed young man sitting next to a magnificent chick. And they are driving what appears to be on an endless, magnificent highway that is tree-lined forever and ever and ever and ever and ever and ever and ever. Well, do I have to tell you what it's like, really, fellas? Huh? Any of you guys? No, I don't, do I? No, I don't. And then how have you seen these people that are going into their friendly bank for that friendly instant loan? Oh, boy. Have you tried to cash even your own paycheck at one of these friendly banks? You got a friend, all right. I'll tell you. Now, I'm wondering what kind of a dream world we live in the commercials. Now, what really interests me is the people sitting out there watching these. All of them drive cars. And most of them, anyway. And most of them have tried to get a carburetor fixed at 3 o'clock in the morning. And when one of these friends, do they make any relationship between what they see on the screen and what's out there in the world? I guess not. It's like a movie, you know. It's like some kind of a movie. Have you ever noticed a more jovial set of plumbers, all played by out of work Broadway comic character actors? Those plumbers you see, those guys. Have you ever noticed those old duffers that come around and tell you about using Ajax and stuff? Well, it gets rid of the deep stains. You don't need a plumber, madam. Get rid of the deep... Yeah. How long has it been since you had a friendly plumber in your house, you know? Yeah. I know. And yet we sit there and we watch these things, and somehow they make sense. And you know that lady in that clean, you know, the Mr. Clean commercial? Did you ever see a more filthy house? What is she doing on that floor? Did you ever see anything like that? What a bunch of pigs. She doesn't need Mr. Clean. She needs a flamethrower. That is really disgusting. I'm telling you. And and you know, it goes on and on and on. I'm curious about that. Of course, the relationship between reality and what we live in is always interesting. I with this business with the flat tire is just one other time. I remember Friendly. You know, I'll never forget the time I go into this Friendly gas station. See, it's one of these ones that advertises its fantastic friendly people. Well, so I go in there, see, and they've got an automatic pump. You know, the kind they just stick it into your gas tank and let it go, and it's supposed to turn off. So I go in there, and he sticks the thing into the gas tank. Blah, 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 ding, 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 it's going. Well, this thing is going ding, 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 like so. You know, it's going ding, dong, ding. And I'm sitting in the car, and I begin to smell gas. And it's been dinging away there for half an hour. It's ding, dong, boing, ding, ding, ding. And I get out funny, and I'm knee-deep in gas. You know, that friendly extra-octane gasoline is now sloshing around my ankles. The thing has put in about 19 and a half gallons, you know, in my little 6-gallon tank or whatever. And it's still dinging away in the water, and the gas is squirting out the back. So I run into the gas station. Hey, man, hey, oh, hey. Well, I can't find the guy. You know, they're always under the grease rack or something or out in the back. Hey, Mac, hey. Well, finally he comes out. All the while it's going ding, ding, ding. Shh, the stuff is squirting. Ding, dong, ding. Well, then he finally runs around to the side of the pump. He throws it down. Boing. He says, that'll $21.75. I said, what do you mean? It's all over your crummy gas station. Look at it. It's flowing down the turnpike. He says, yeah, well, all right. It's 21 on a meter. What do you expect me to do? Pay for it, Mac? They come in and check this thing every day. They come in here. I know. I just work here. It's $21.75. What do you mean, 21? The gas is sloshing around my ankles. Well, this went on for a good 2.5 hours, you know. What do you mean, $21.75? I'll call the cops. Yeah. You just keep your eye out for that white insignia there. You'll just go in there, Dad, and you'll get it right behind the ear. And then there was another one. I'll tell you, in another one of the gas stations I went into, the same gas station that they almost blew their gasket when I asked them to fix my tire, there was a lady sitting in a car. And, oh, boy, smoke was coming out of her ears. She was sitting in the car, and there were two guys looking into her opened hood. They were just sort of leaning. And a third guy is coming over to look in the window to her. And she says, now, look, this has been 3 hours.
She says, why don't you just admit you don't know what you're doing? Why don't you just tell me you don't know how to fix it? That you're just fooling around and let me go to some place where I can get it fixed? And there's a long pause, and the guy says, what do you mean, lady? You're trying to tell us we don't know our business? She says, I don't know whether you know your business or not, but for 2.5, 3 hours I've been sitting here, and it's still boiling over. And there's a long, long, another pregnant pause. He says, look, lady, are you going to try to get out of paying for all the hours we put in on this thing? She says, no, let me pay and I'll go. Just let me pay and I'll go, that's all. And away she went, smoke pouring out of the front of her car, steam coming out of the gas pipe. It's just a question, you know. I wonder whether we think these things or not. Oh, yes. Speaking of friendly service, this is WOR, AM and FM in New York. And, it's exciting. We'll be here. We'll be here until they blow the whistle. And they blow the whistle in this business. And we have here, speaking of whistleblowers, we have this Pottery of All Nations. And boy, let me tell you, if you are getting a little desperate about Christmas shopping, this is a genuine word of advice. I would like to recommend that if you are coming into New York, please remember the name Pottery of All Nations. There are three of them. And they literally do have pottery and cookingware and stainless steelware and all kinds of things from all over the world. And fantastic Christmas gifts at savings of an incredible nature, literally. And it is truly imported and a lot of fine stuff that you won't find anywhere else in New York City at prices you won't believe. And this is really true. You'll find three of them. One is on Sheridan Square. And incidentally, they just serve coffee there. You just fool around all day. And there's a sign in there that says, please handle everything. And they mean it, you know. This is Sheridan Square, Pottery of All Nations. That's on 7th Avenue South. There's one over in Paramus on Route 4. And then there's one on Lexington Avenue at 64th, and they are open Saturdays. And they're open late. So, Pottery of All Nations, man. Okay? And let's see. We have with us the Xmas Fund, if you'd like to send in a buck or two to make Mr. Leader's Christmas nicer. You have to send it to Box 710. That's Box 710, Times Square Station, New York. It's the WOR Children's Christmas Fund. And we have plenty of kids working here at WOR. And, of course, they're not children chronologically, but that's not how we measure children anymore in this world, is it, friends? No. We'll be here. Gee, I'm awful tonight. We'll be here for a while. And let's see. But there are many things in the wind, really things in the wind. Let me see here. I got a genuine straw in the wind. I'm keeping all these things for my special trivia file here, which I'm going to submit to the Library of Congress. What did I do? I left that somewhere. Crying out loud. How about that? My most important piece of trivia of the day, and I leave it. Well, it's all right. Oh, yes, here it is. Here it is. Here's this one will hold you. Yeah, and it, in a way, it's connected with the whole business of what we do versus what we say we do, you know? And I think the commercials are like that. I think most commercial places, most guys that make commercials, are really trying to, in a way, overcompensate for the very thing that they know they haven't got. And so if you hear an outfit that is really, really banging home the point that they're friendly, well, you just know there's been a lot of worrying around the front office. J.P., you know, there's a lot of people are getting mad at the way the clerks are hitting people when they come in. What do you got? So the next thing you know, they make a commercial telling how lovely they are. But they don't ever get down, you know, the word never gets down to the clerk. In fact, so you will find, generally speaking, that in the commercial world, the very thing that people are worried about, you'll find, is the thing that is generally sold to people. In other words, we'll take a look at the cigarette commercials. Why, if you were just to look at the cigarette commercials casually, you would believe that one of the great panaceas for that which ails you is about 7 cartons of, you know? That's the truth. You never saw healthier people in your life. Did you ever see anything like that? The wind is blowing through their hair, and they're galloping around on horses, and their cheeks are rosy, And their eyes are sparkling, and they're obviously making it with everybody conceivable of the whole horizon. You see, and of course the implication is from you-know-what, you know. That's right, you know, with the tips there, the filters, and all the whole scene going. Well, this is always the case. If you notice that hardly anybody who ever drinks beer is fat in commercials, and yet every last beer drinker I know has got fat hanging on his ears even. Just a fact, you know. Just a general fact. And have you noticed also too that people who advertise girdles, they need girdles, all right. You notice those people? They all weigh about 74 pounds. They're about 9 feet tall. They need girdles. Yeah. And it shows them putting on the girdle, you know. And it's a big thing what the girdle does for them. And yet actually the fat people who need the girdles never show up on commercials. So you know, just wait. Cars, that's another one. How about cars? Oh, boy. You know, the one thing that almost every guy who has driven any cars in the last 5 or 6 years will tell you, they're made out of Reynolds wrap. No, this is the truth. They really are, Dad. And if you don't think so, you ought to ask your insurance guy. Oh, boy. I'm telling you, you look hard at one of these things, and they got a dent in the trunk. They really do. They just fold up. One guy put his hand through a fender here a couple of weeks ago on 84th Street. Yeah, just leaning, you know, going right through, he goes. New car. Well, yet you will find that in the commercials, they stress one thing, rugged durability. Yes, this car is built to go and go and go and go and go. And of course, you know, there it is, the rain, it washes away in real life. 7 minutes after you got the car, the chrome has got all pockmarks on it and rust. And, you know, yeah, I mean, let's face it, we all know it. You know, I'm not saying anything against anybody here, so don't get mad. You work in an agency. And you know what's so funny? Is some guy is going to get real mad and call up if I'm an agency, and he's got a car with pockmarked chrome. And he's also a beer drinker, you know, and he wears a size 48 belt. You know, so he's calling him. And his wife is a girdle wearer, a size 36. You know, that kind of thing. And so, what is it? What are we trying to hide from each other? You know, we're all in this together. We all know a few basic facts of life. It's the truth, you know. And yet, time and time again, and you'll find, well, of course, it goes in men's clothing. It goes into, in almost every area. Have you noticed one? Here was an ad the other day, for example, about men's perfume. Well, you know, that's a pretty esoteric subject there. Men's perfume. They weren't selling, you know, there was some perfume there. And this perfume was sold, and the ad said, for men who like women, it said. That's just the way it said it, with exclamation points. Like, well, there's a little worry, you know. They were a little worried about what was being said around. And so they had to say, you know, it's always, so you can always be sure that exactly the opposite is true. Well, it's a... Oh, I'm awful tonight. That's a terrible day. We better start telling you Christmas stories. And speaking of Christmas stories, here's one from Morris Township for those of you. This is going right into my vast trivia file, and 1,000 years from now, they'll know how it is. Morris Township. You know anything about friendly little Morris Township? Of course. There is no more American place than Morris. This is the land, believe me. This really is drum majoretteville. It's the whole scene. Pom-pom twirlers and young clean limb football players, and they run around. Oh, yes, you never saw anything like it. Morris Township. And, of course, I want to read, can you imagine what a nice little a half-hour vignette, a Christmas vignette this would make on TV? Morris Township, boys and girls in the Township Junior Rifle Club. Maybe I better adopt my Jersey accent, huh? Morris Township. Boys and girls in the Township Junior Rifle Club will aim at pictures of Santa Claus in their annual Merry Christmas shoot on December 20th. They will use Santa Claus pictures as their targets. Other Christmas targets will be free ornaments, cards, and small boxes wrapped as presents. The club, sponsored by the Township Recreation Commission, has 90 members aged 11 to 18. Shooting with .22 caliber rifles will take place at the range in the National Guard Armory in Western Avenue. The target boxes with pictures of Santa Claus on them will contain slips of paper instructing young marksmen to select Christmas presents bought with money raised by members through various projects throughout the year. I can think of no better way to celebrate Christmas, kiddies, than shooting at pictures of Santa Claus.
and other Christmas presents and other wonderful little Christmas sentiments. And so we march on, and a Merry Christmas to all of you.
All right, there. Stars and Stripes forever there. That's it there.
Well, I have this friend who's doing a piece on, he's a newspaper writer, and he's doing this piece on Christmas, Santa Clauses. And he said that the Santa Clauses, it's so rotten being a Santa Claus these days with these tough kids that are coming around. Do you know that in the big stores here in New York now, that a Santa Claus has 1 hour of work and 3 hours off all day? He is off 3 hours for every hour he's on. And boy, do they yell, those kids. And he said, he says, not only do they yell, the most important change that has come about, according to old veteran Santa Clausers, the old players, the big change is that now the kids don't ask for a fire truck. They'll ask for a brand name. And it's all brand names all the way to Claude Kirshner has triumphed. You know? Oh, boy. I'll tell you. Yes, he did. He hit the jackpot this year. We finally proved to the industry. So, and of course, that's a little embarrassing when Santa Claus is working for a store that doesn't handle that brand. And it goes on and on and on. But then you know, this is just the way it is. Now, do you know that one of the most interesting little things that a kid can get this time, this year for Christmas, is a teddy bear that carries a gun? Teddy bear is well armed, and if you hit it in the right place with your gun, the bear runs around and screams. Yeah, and then finally falls right over flat dead, and a little imitation blood with vitamin B12 in it. Stop it, gang. Yes, we're moving along with Christmas. Oh, of course, there's a lot of things about the Christmas scene that have been moving and going forward. There's a lot of talk, of course, about the weaponry today in Christmas world, and I think that most people are kind of missing the point. You know, they think if they ban weapons, they will somehow ban the urge that has come about, which makes it possible to make all the kids want the weapons. I don't know. The prohibitionists tried that a few years ago. There was a lot of laughing it up in the basement that went on. I guess what'll happen. You know, I'm not one of these people who views with alarm, however, because you can't really view it with alarm, because that's the way it is. Really, you know, I have never once, and I hope nobody has misinterpreted me, I have never once said that any other time was any better than this time. All I have ever said is that we are continually evolving and changing, and in many ways getting more interesting and more outward. So even though a kid might have wanted to carry a Tommy gun to school a few years ago, now he does. That's about the only difference. And it's heading towards some interesting repercussions. You know that there's an A-bomb game that you can get. Oh, yeah. Where you can practice A-bombing your friends. Sure, yeah, that's right. And, there's all kinds of... you play it with an A-bomb. You play... You know, of course, I think that one of the great dangers of our time is the fact that we are, as... I'm talking about adults. I'm talking about people who produce things. By produce things, I mean guys that make toys. There are people who produce movies. There are guys who produce LPs and so on, all up and down the line, produce nightclub shows and so on, that we have begun to take real events and real situations and make them into a show business gambit, a big gimmick. I just wonder how many toy companies were stuck with all kinds of satirical games about the late President Kennedy that were stuck with millions of those that were ready for the Xmas market. And all of them, of course, were not only satirical, but were all vaguely, most of them completely disrespectful. Completely, not only disrespectful, but in some ways reducing the presidency and the world events to the nature of something that can be played with in a 2.5-hour game with everybody on Saturday night and the beer. And, of course, this adds, then, to the great sense of unreality that people have when real events occur.
So they're playing all the time A-bomb, or they're playing all the time internet. You know, there's games that are based on cornering the internet, like taking over the world. You know, literally, there are games called world domination, things of that nature. Well, I wonder what the people who play these games, what their attitude is towards real plans for world domination. Do they think they're also big gambits, big showbiz bits? I think we're the only nation ever to sell rubber masks of world leaders where you can walk around and wear a Khrushchev head if you want to. You know, this is true. I don't think you can... I wonder if you can buy those in China. You can walk around with a Lyndon Johnson head on your, you know, rubber one. Or if you can walk around with a Mao Zedong head. Have you seen those heads? You haven't? Oh, they're a big deal, sure. Even though a lot of people are inclined to say, well, that doesn't mean anything, I disagree completely. I say that all these things are highly indicative of something, and not only highly indicative, that they're also they can also not only be indicative of things, they can also form things in their own right. Now, one of the big problems today is the, you know, the old title, the old Jimmy Dean movie, Rebel Without a Cause? One of the real problems today is the liberal without a cause, or the angry man without a cause. I shouldn't even use the term liberal. It's just the word, the angry man without a cause. The years ago, an angry man was generally kind of left. He just kind of leaned towards the great mass. Well, today, the angry man has become sort of, he's become disenchanted with the mass. He feels he's better than the mass, and furthermore, he feels that socialism and communism has failed, pretty much. It's been discredited. And yet he can't become right, so he's stuck there, but he's still got the mind of an angry guy, you see, so he doesn't know what to do. So generally, you'll find these people will be angry about great generalities now. They'll be, say, anti-war. They'll be very angry about war, which is roughly analogous to the old days when a politician said he loved mothers. You know, it's easy to be anti-war. It's easy to be pro-peace. Those are the easiest things to be anti and pro you can find. And so you'll hear guys, very well-meaning guys, are constantly being interviewed on radio shows and television shows, movie makers, and they'll say, "Well, I feel that the time has come to make a really hard-hitting, truthful anti-war movie." Hard-hitting, truthful anti-war movie. Come on. I don't think you have to convince many people that war isn't good, you know? I mean, the assumption always is made that there's large numbers of people who like it, you know? And that's one of those great cliches. One of those great, one of those big things that hang there. But nevertheless, this is a constantly recurring theme among the producers and the people who are continually being very honest and very hard-hitting and very, very brave. Very brave to be anti-war. So generally what's happened is that the people who have the angry frame of mind, the real angry people, is that they have begun to be angry at not the causes, because that can be very embarrassing when you start talking about the causes of war. You largely ignore that. And so they become angry at the instruments of war, which is very easy to do. It's like being angry. It's like being anti-machine gun. Anti-machine gun. So as you carry it further, it's anti-bomb. As though the only reason there are wars is because we got a bomb. This is a very sophomoric attitude towards wars. Have you noticed that almost all of the anti-war movies recently have not even admitted the existence of Hitler? There have been about a dozen of them to show you that war is a terrible thing, but not one of them said that there was a Hitler around. That made it, unfortunately, imperative that the world either go to war or else the alternative was a pretty bad scene. It's like being anti-police but ignoring the fact there are murderers. So there you are. That's one of the great cop-outs. Yeah, I noticed this in several. First of all, I noticed this in Heller's book. Catch 22 is an anti-war book, but nowhere does it admit that war, unfortunately, is there. I mean, there's something that's even more obscene than war. I kind of think Dachau was a little more obscene than war. I don't know. To me, it was, at least. And that may be an old-fashioned attitude, but it seemed to me that it was. But nevertheless, this is another one of the syndromes of our time. It takes many forms. It takes so many forms that the forms are so multitudinous that in the end the pattern is almost impossible to discern. It's like people who will become anti the president, and this was certainly evident a few months before Mr. Kennedy's tragedy, that there were many people who were anti the president because they didn't seem to like what was going on in the country. In other words, it was as though the president somehow had something to do with the race problem, and the president somehow had something to do with the fact that a lot of guys are unhappy because of automation and one thing and another. It's constantly confusing one thing for the other, and this is going on continually. I saw a movie here a few weeks back, which was hurriedly withdrawn from premiership because of Mr. Kennedy's tragedy. But it was another one in the long line, and a lot of people will like it, you see, assuming that the reason we have wars is because we've got generals. Oh, yes. This is one of the great misconceptions among the anti-war people. And they'll sit there and look you right in the eye and say that's true. That the generals, they'll look you, and they keep saying such fantastic cliches like war makes guys who like to be fighters and like to fight. I heard poor little Eli Wallach say that the other night. Most guys who say these things haven't really been around much of a war, but they constantly say that, and yet some of the most sadly peaceful guys have been great warriors. An example is Ike. They're crying out loud, Ike Ike's idea of doing something about terrible situation was sending a condolence note, or you know, something of that nature. When yeah, you know, this is true, and people continually ignore the reality of what men are. They walk around with a cliche in their mind, and by George, that world, those people had better fit that cliche, or else then they just ignore it. That's it. And the assumption is that all of our generals are raving maniacs. This is one of the newest gambits of the fail-safe crowd. Well, it's not true. Just not true. I've known several in my time, and I know this is just a complete falsehood. But it's a desire to make a point, and the point will be made regardless of reality. It's like the anti-fuzz crowd. There's another group who would just be anti-police. And they hate it when a policeman does something good to them. You know, they get really mad. I knew one girl that chased a cop's horse for over a block and a half, hoping the horse would step on her so she could holler police brutality. You know, that's the truth. I'm telling you a true story. I'm not making it up. It's one of the interesting things of our day and age. We just got to find something. Now, in a current issue of one of the men's magazines, there is a long, very scurrilous, and I think also a very untrue blast at one of the religions by a so-called comic. Now, for some reason or other, this is applauded when it appears that way. And yet, these same people are always saying, you know, what we should have is racial tolerance, we should have religious tolerance. And so it's come full circle to the point now where you can, in public, literally blast somebody's religion in the most unfair, totally untrue terms, just completely, and be applauded for it. If it's certain religions. Remember, that's very important. If it's certain religions. And other religions you couldn't touch. You just can't. And it's very... There it is. There it is. I wondered, you know, I read one of these... I read this particular piece, and I was fascinated. The first thing that came to my mind was how the world is not only not doing away with hate, it's making it more prominent, very more prominent, and it's become now a national business. It really literally has. And I thought of a friend of mine who was killed in the war, kid who I grew up with. You've heard me mention Paul Schwartz from time to time. Well, he was killed in the war. He was killed, he was 19, I believe, at the time. And he was a navigator. And he was killed over Italy. And the first thing that hit me was, I wonder if he were to read a magazine like this now, the years after he's been killed, if somehow he could come back and read this, I wonder if he could conceivably believe that it was the same country, who got very angry when other people got up and talked things, you know, and said things about religions and one thing and another, other religions. It's very interesting. I doubt it very much. That in the earlier days, when I'm talking about earlier days, I'm talking about the early days of hate as a product, that hate was always a marginal thing. It was always sold by guys who had to sell it on street corners with very smudgy mimeograph pieces of paper. You know what I mean, Walt? Hate was sold by guys who recognized the fact they were selling hate, and people who bought it knew they were. And they would buy smudgy things on street corners, or they would go down into dark little basements and have angry hate meetings and that kind of thing. Oh, yeah. But now, hate is being sold as the truth. It's an interesting new twist. And it's being sold by big, nationally publicized magazines and movies, one thing and another. And it's a new kind of hate, very difficult to ascertain. Because we always assume that hate is one kind in this country, that it's racial. Generally, we like to assume that it's anti-Negro. This is what we like to assume that hate is. Well, there are all kinds of hate. There are many kinds of hate, and the more subtle ones are the ones that are not recognized as hate. They're generally applauded by the population at large at any given time that it's being done. For example, the great example of that, of course, in recent history, is during the great, and I say that very editorially, the quote, great days of the Nazis in the 30s, that to be anti-Jewish in Germany was not considered a hate at all. These guys said they were dealing with truth. You know, it was always truth. It was always applauded by the population at large. Oh, yeah. And yet we're doing pretty much the same thing in other areas, that the real hate that is evidenced throughout the country in many ways is not the ones that we're all conscious of and fighting against. It's something else, other kinds. And those are the subtle ones, because they will grow and grow and seem to be growing even as we watch them grow. I remember about a year or so ago, before the recent tragedy, I did two or three shows on that subject of this growing violent hate that was neither right-wing nor left-wing, but another group entirely. And a lot of people got all excited and wrote in and said, well, this is alarmist stuff. And those same people, after the disaster, wrote in and said, well, maybe, perhaps, there might be possibly something growing here. Well, of course, we have a great tendency in this country to isolate things as though they are not part of a larger, and I'm not talking about plot at all, not part of a larger body of opinion or growth of something. In short, if we have a situation that occurs, say, in one block, we just say, well, that was that nut. That's all. That was that nut. Well, if we look around and we see that it's happening on all fronts. Did you hear about this kid the other day with the automobile a couple of days ago? That's a very interesting story. Read very carefully about that story. And have you noticed the one growing thing with the new violent people is a complete detachment from it. Like Dillinger never pretended he was anything but a killer. No, he didn't. He really didn't. Now, I'm not saying that Dillinger was more honest, but he did. He came out of another time, and when Dillinger robbed the bank, he just robbed the bank, and that was the end of it. But today, the man who performs a violent deed will often absolutely go to his, he will go to his dying day denying he did it. Just, he had nothing to do with it. And that's the end of it. And of course, he knows that large numbers of people then will side with him. It's an interesting problem. Because we do have a feeling today that it is impossible to be a criminal. That the people who transgress are invariably victims rather than aggressors. It's a fascinating new psychology. In short, you will find far more television shows that tell you to understand the murderer, and hardly any shows that talk about weeping a few tears for the murdered. It's a new kind of worship of violence. It's a kind of sympathizing with violence that I'm talking about here. I'm not arguing one way or the other regarding the psychoanalytical problems regarding the murderer.
It's an unfortunate fact that they are here. But then, on the other hand, so are people who are not murderers. And it's a question of which one is going to get hurt, really, in the end. This is a highly complex situation here. The gradual changing of an attitude towards good and evil in this country, and a shift. And those words are never used anymore, by the way, in this country. Those words have disappeared. Aggression appears occasionally. That word is used often. You'll hear other words, but the words good and evil have almost completely disappeared. And so, because of this, because of the failure of our society, and I'm talking about the whole complex of industrial society all over the world, including Russia, because of this new thing, it is possible to contemplate and to carry out unbelievable, fantastic transgressions on dignity and even on life and limb without ever the slightest feeling of conscience. Because once you've eliminated conscience, and that's another word that hardly ever is used, once you've eliminated conscience, you've also eliminated a lot of other things. You've also eliminated the right to complain, which is probably the most subtle of all. The eliminations that come about when this great erasure process goes on. But nevertheless, the time, it goes on. And again, I suppose you can say a footnote to it, that this is not decrying the good old days versus the bad new days. Not at all. This is just an evolution in mankind. And I believe as more and more our technical progress goes forward, so goes something else. I have a feeling that man is really being formed by his machines rather than he forms his machines. That there has never been yet a machine that had even the slightest conscience. But there have been very smart ones and very violent ones. And I think that as we are becoming more and more like our machines, so we will become more like them that way, in subtler ways. We're certainly growing bigger. The New York Times had a whole piece on that in the magazine section. Physically bigger, you know. So are bulldozers. So are buildings. You know. So are crimes, too, by the way.
This WOR Radio, your station for news. This Christmas Eve, thousands of hospitalized children in the WOR listening area will be dreaming of Santa Claus and of presents. With your help, those dreams will come true. Please send a check or a money order to the WOR Children's Christmas Fund, Box 710, Times Square Station, New York. Make your Christmas merrier by sharing. Thank you. This is WORAM and FM, your RKO general station in New York. Next, Long John Neville at midnight. Ladies and gentlemen, because the following five-hour period has been set aside for necessary weekly maintenance of WORFM, we now conclude broadcasting activities until 5 o'clock this morning when we shall present the program Sunrise Serenade. The program Long John Neville, usually presented at this time, can be heard on WOR Radio, AM, at 710 on your radio dial. Frequency modulation station WOR-FM is owned and operated by RKO General Incorporated, with offices and studios at 1440 Broadway in New York City, with additional studios in the Empire State Building at 350 Fifth Avenue, corner of 34th Street in Manhattan. WOR-FM broadcasts at an assigned frequency of 98.7 megacycles, with transmitter complex high atop the Empire State Building. During the time we are on the air, WOR-FM carries the scheduled programs of WOR-AM. Now, on behalf of the management and the staff of WOR-FM, this is Carl Warren bidding you all a very good night and a very good morning. Now, our national anthem.